We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
No, not yet.
Ready?
Ready? Okay. I had to swallow first. All right. That was just Cloud Nothings. What song is that?
Morgan.
Morgan. No. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, DJ Never Forget, sitting across from, or kind of kitty corner.
Catty corner.
I've never gotten that phrase right, ever. never really understood it.
It's diagonal.
Okay, so I'm Diagonal from Terry Diabolik. I'm happy to be sitting here.
Yeah, I think we're all happy.
Crazy 6 weeks for those of you who don't know. I think you alluded to it last week, but I was in a major car accident, but I'm fine. I just have a huge scar down my front. I had 35 staples in my front, but I'm back.
Welcome
eating
back.
Pizza, yeah, right.
Like and first time we've done the show together in about 2 months together.
Yeah, we took some time off, and then, I was on the West Coast recovering, and here we are, so... The reason why we played that Cloud Nothing song is because we have the boys from Group Tightener in here today to kick off our five-week, five-part Brooklyn label series. Lecture, question and answer, advice, don't do it type of thing. So welcome to the show, boys.
Thank you. I'll be giving a lecture later.
Yeah. There will be an online quiz for all of you wannabes. That, of course, is always music comes later in the show. But the big thing... What did you say?
Main event.
Well, no. We have 2 main events. Possibly three. But the big thing this week is that our barbecue series is back. We are in our 4th summer, and we have kind of kicked it up a notch.
I would say we kicked it up. We are joined by Jesse Schenker from Reset. Jesse, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
What's going on? Good to have me.
Yes, it is good to have you.
Flipped it.
You know, to recap, so, you know, the years past, we've done some of our favorite restaurants that have been more of like a local Brooklyn sort of vibe. And this year, we wanted to head across the pond to New York. And
no one says that.
I think they is that what they mean from across the pond. I don't. No. Anyway, and we want to go look at restaurants that were doing really amazing high-end cuisine. And Reset had been on the top of our list from November. I think I started. That's when I started hunting you down.
Yeah, I think so. Been a few months.
And if you haven't been to Reset, I'd make your reservations before Wednesday, because I think after the barbecue, the list is going to get longer and longer. I mean, you guys are already sort of booked every night, aren't you?
Pretty much.
So, Jesse, why don't you talk to us about your cuisine, how you got started, and sort of how you reached the type of food you're doing now?
Well, I grew up in South Florida. Kind of worked around down there. Went to culinary school down there. Didn't go to high school. And basically, after I maxed out all the, I don't want to say the talent in South Florida, but I think what, you know, I kind of hit the culinary pinnacle down there, and you know, I knew I needed to come to New York to really learn and really move forward in my craft. I guess just like anything else, whether you're an artist or a musician, I think except for maybe an actor, you go to Hollywood, but everything else, you come to New York. So packed my bags, I came up. I spent a little time working in the kitchen at Gordon Ramsay in Midtown. I staged around at other restaurants, three-star restaurants in New York. And in the process, I met a lot of good people that were supporting me and that wanted to kind of get a little business off the ground. So basically, I met with a Christina Lee, who's the pastry chef. She was a pastry chef at Per Se. And we got together, and we started doing catering. We did it like on our nights off in a bakery in Harlem, which was kind of cool. It's like an underground thing. And then it was like just on our days off, like once or twice a week. And then we got, you know, kind of blew up. Somebody from Daily Candy had came in and wrote an article about it the next day. They actually didn't even warn us. They called us, and they're like, we're going to write a review, and we're going to publish it, and we're going to put it out. Be prepared. And we're like, okay. And I didn't even know what Daily Candy was. I still don't even know what Daily Candy is. And, but I know that when we were doing it at a bakery. The bakery phone line, we got emails. I mean, it just started blowing up, and it was only like three sentences. I mean,
what was the place called? What was it called?
We called the Reset Private Dining. So okay. A friend of mine, my buddy Andre, he actually lives, I think, in Brooklyn here. He on this side of the pond. He
see,
it's not taking off.
It's taking off.
It's not taking off.
he studied in Paris, so he you know, he learned how to speak French or whatnot. And obviously, I'm you know, working in kitchens. Basically, you know, it's all French technique. I mean, that's really where the roots of it came from. So I said, I want one word, something strong in French, something to do with food. So he's like, I think he thought about it. He came back with a few names. I don't remember what the other ones are. And he's like, how about Reset? We said it differently. And I was like, what does that mean? He says recipe. I was like, dude, that's it. So it just kind of stuck. So
it's a great name.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it capital R or lowercase R? Because I've seen it two different
ways. It's all lowercases. Okay. I mean, I think the designer did it all in lowercase.
Right.
I liked all lowercase.
Times New Roman, I think.
No.
It's not Times New Roman.
Not even close.
I remember paying wrong for the again, font. I don't think.
Yeah, you don't pony up. It's like, oh yeah, Times New Roman. That's going to be
$500. Helvetica.
Yeah. It was Arial Bold.
Yeah.
So it kind of just like took off. I mean, we incorporated. Oh yeah, like I said, the phone lines, emails. I mean, like everyone was like, can I make a party for four tomorrow? For party down. I'm like, were they out of their minds? I have a full-time job. So we kind of missed the wave because I had work and I had to give notice. So I actually gave notice at my job, and we all put in like $1,000. It was Brian Gaw, who owns the bakery, Savoy Bakery in East Harlem, and Christina Lee and myself. And we got an LLC, and we bought a couple of things, some china, and that was it. And then we tried to capitalize on all the old work. I mean, people like wanted to come, like, and we could accommodate. We're like fully booked. We were lying to everybody. I mean, you know, fully booked, but you know, it wasn't really.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that.
No. This was with the catering, though. It was like we do one seating a night. We weren't lying because we were booked, but we weren't.
Right.
It wasn't.
But that just makes people want to go more. right?
To a point.
No, okay, it wasn't.
Are you listening to the story? Because he's saying he missed the wave.
Yeah, I missed the wave. Yeah.
No. But okay.
Well, we kind of missed the wave, but we caught up on the wave. I mean,
right.
Yeah. But I mean, we're going back like 4 years. I mean, this is like.
To keep on going, there, like if the beach is full and you want to keep surfing.
Nope.
No,
stop,
okay, anyway,
please.
Anyway.
Your metaphors aren't.
Yeah. They're not really working.
No longer are you doing.
So it was 4 years.
No, it was, yeah. I mean, I think, well, I opened Reset Restaurant like almost like 15, 16 months ago. And then it was a year of like trying to get it off the ground. And then, so yeah, I would say when I started Reset, 3.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
So when did.
The timing is bad.
So. All right, so you missed this initial wave.
We missed the wave, but we quit our jobs. We incorporated. We bought stuff. We went all in, and we didn't really market at all. I mean, I was big about like we needed to, I think no one's going to want to come if they don't know we exist. So I was big on trying to get our name out there, but it was kind of just like a snowball. Like one person came in on a Thursday night for 8 people. The guy wanted to surprise his wife and have a little some friends over, and we had a fancy dinner. We did 10 courses, but tablecloths, draw curtains. I mean, you're literally like getting draw. I don't know if you guys have been. East to like 110th between 3rd and Lex, but I mean it's not that pretty. I mean,
right,
it's
kinda, yeah, right.
So you're getting off the train on 6th Avenue there, not 6th Avenue, the 6th line on 3rd Avenue, and you're kind of in the grungy area, you know. And then you walk up and you see this bakery and these lights and these curtains, and you go in and you get this whole crazy meal, you know, right.
Which I think New Yorkers always love. They're like, what's the crappiest looking place that you could put me in front of and then go through the door? And it's just amazing on the other side.
Yeah, yeah. No, basically, that's what it was. I mean, you'd open the curtains, you'd come in, and it was, like, candlelit and real nice. And we wanted to emulate the whole, like, the French Laundry experience. Like, right. That was the thing. It was, like, 10 or 12 courses, small, really good. And, like, if you're going to emulate the best, I mean, if you're going to emulate somebody, you might as well do the best. So, obviously, Thomas Keller, that whole.
I have a question. Since you missed the wave, and I always love asking this question, what was, like, the low this point that you felt where like I shouldn't have done this,
or
you
never were like, thought that never thought okay that. Yeah, yeah.
But what was okay, so then so, what was so the like, best survival like you did for survival to get through like the lull?
Well, I did a lot of stuff. I was always a mover and a shaker. I mean, I was working. I have private clients that I've had that I still have, so I was cooking for people privately in New Jersey, and I mean, I always had things going on. And I remember I was there's a salon, Paul Lebrecht salon, spot some ritzy, like, you know, you want a haircut, you're gonna pay $300,
right?
And I was catering lunches there. I remember sitting up doing that, and I met some famous people and kind of LinkedIn and you know,
yeah,
basically that kind of stuff. So I was able to pay the rent.
You had a base to pay rent.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I wasn't, you know. Plus, I saved money from working Gordon.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't.
How was it working for Gordon?
You know, to be honest, it was intense.
Did you work directly with him?
No, I mean, well, he's got an empire to run,
right?
So I mean, he's talking about bouncing all over. I mean, I probably met him like 4 times in the year I was there. But his people, I mean, when he comes, he's very serious, and his staff is, you know, his proteges are extremely disciplined, and it was great. It was a great experience. I mean, it really, you know, I remember anxiety on the train going to work, like, oh my God, what's today going to bring, you know?
All right, well, we're going to take a quick music interlude and eat some of this delicious pizza, but when we come back, talk about the rise of the wave, you know, the after missing it, coming back up into Reset to getting where it is, the music you play there, because the soundtrack is an awesome juxtaposition to the food that's being served.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the barbecue that's happening this Wednesday at Good Company. Listen to Snacky Tunes.
Baby.
right, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We were all mid-deep in a pizza break. That was just, what was that?
Best Coast.
Best Coast?
Yeah.
What song?
Make You Mine.
Okay, awesome, very nice. So we are here with Jesse Shanker of Reset. We are very excited to have him not just in the studio this week, but also as the first chef of our barbecue series coming up on Wednesday, which is unfortunately, well, however you want to say it, advanced tickets sold out. Thank you so much for Gilt for helping us out with that. But we will be having...
We're talking about like 80 or so $10
tickets. $10
tickets
at the door. Doors are at 7, so...
But you get a free cocktail
with
it.
Get a free cocktail. So get it early. So when we last left you in this harrowing tale...
You're making terrible jokes.
That's radio talk. I'm like, it's like the shadow. Anyway, you were talking about how you missed the initial wave of the supper club success, but you had a good base. So when did things start shifting at Reset? When did people start coming? When did you start noticing that people were like...
It was basically just word of mouth. I mean, like, it just kind of organically happened. I would say it took about 3 months after that initial missed wave to get a consistent few parties a week where it was actually just where we were working and stressed about working and multiple parties and different venues. And then people were like, will you come to our home because we don't want to come to Harlem? And we're like, sure. And we go to people's houses. And I mean, the houses that I saw, I mean, incredible. Like,
oh, yeah.
Totally incredible.
But so then you open the restaurant, right? Talk about the opening of the restaurant and, like, I mean, you know, being over 60 months, getting 2 stars in the New York Times, that's a great accomplishment. And talk about the food that you're cooking there, because the food there is really, it's really your own food.
Yeah. Well, basically, we'll fast forward. So, Chef Ever Dining did good. I got this idea to do a restaurant. I worked on it. My best friend was living with me, my wife, my girlfriend at the time. We kind of got this whole thing together. I was able to raise the money. We get the place open. We find this small, you know, corner spot on West 12th and Greenwich Street. Beautiful. You know, basically figured all logistics of it. Got it open. Most work I ever did in my life. And I wanted to do food that was basically set up to where you can almost... I didn't want to say create your own tasting menu, but like I wanted people... I hated going to restaurants and getting like having to order an appetizer and then an entree, and after like 4 or 5 bites just being sick of the flavor. Like I wanted people to be able to try multiple things and have different flavors. I wanted to show that myself and my kitchen chef were skilled and we were technicians, that we actually could do more than just boil pasta, toss it with sauce, and slop it on a bowl. So I wanted there to be some technique involved, but I also wanted it to be very rustic. So I like to say it was rustic yet refined, because there's some skill, but it's still very homey food. Everything's very comforting. So it's basically, I put together snacks and plates versus starters and mains. So basically, you can get a couple of snacks, mm-hmm. you can get a few plates. So if you want to just come in and get a cod fritter and arugula, you can do that, and you can... Or you can come in and have 10 courses. I mean, it all depends. You can come in with 4 people, order the whole menu, and just eat a couple bites and then switch plates. I mean, there's charcuterie. We make a lot of stuff in-house. We get some good artisanal cheeses.
That burrata with beef carpaccio and tomato jam, I don't think I could ever get sick of that.
No.
I really think that I could have done with 12 to 20 more bites of that.
Yeah.
I almost considered knocking off something else that I'd ordered. And getting that a second time. It's really just, it's fantastic. And the setting's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it a townhouse?
It wasn't a townhouse. It's just an old building. I mean, there was a couple restaurants before there. I mean, it's got the French windows on the corner, you know, so you get the corner. But it's basically, I mean, the food is, I like that concept too, because it's like, we play loud music. It's got a very West Village feel to it. I mean, it's got that wooden table.
Good West Village feel to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're next to the diner next to you, but you're not right on top of them. But it's intimate, it's warm, and it feels good. And like, and then when you sit down, you don't get there's no chicken Caesar on the menu. You're getting like real good food. You know.
Well, let's talk about that music, because you know, for the setting, because it is. I mean, you walk in and you could go very formal, very generic with music, but you really let part of the experience be the music that you play. Like, you playing a lot of soul music rather than there, a little bit of rock and roll. Can you talk to me about how music has influenced, you know, the setting and the mood of the restaurant?
Well, you know what? I mean, besides food, my other big passion is music. I'm very, you know, I haven't got anything like post 1990 I haven't really got into, but everything... I mean, I'm driven by music. I mean, when I opened the restaurant, I only played Pearl Jam for like the first couple of weeks. It was like my good luck thing. And I'm a huge Eddie Vedder fan.
And you named your son Eddie, right?
My son, who was just born 3 months. 3 months.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
3 months.
Thanks so much. He's named Eddie after Eddie Vedder. But yeah, I mean, I basically wanted to put together a mix of like just... You know, like sometimes you're sitting in a restaurant or you're sitting somewhere and you hear like a Journey song and you just like get pumped up, or you're like, you know, or you're somewhere and you just hear some. So I wanted like a lot of not one hit wonders, because they're not one hit wonders, but like a lot of mix of like from Al Green to Pearl Jam to Madonna to, I mean, just to, you know, Michael Jackson's Thriller. We basically just put together a mix of like, you know, everything. Just like, you know, because there's a lot of bands that I don't really love, but I like one or two of their songs. So right. I kind of just, you know.
You get to pick it, or does your staff also help as well?
Well, I mean, they didn't put together the music. I put together the music, but like I have like a soul station, I have hip hop, I have rock and roll, I have jazz, I have all sorts of stuff. So like if they're in the mood to, like, you know, earlier in the night on a Saturday when it's like the crowd tends to be a little older, and then right. when we get to a show, we'll play the jazz. And then Saturday night at like 11:30, 12 o'clock, I'll put on like the more like, you know, I'll throw in some Common and some other stuff and kind of get the vibe going. But, you know, I let them pick what they want.
Right. You know? So let's talk about this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Barbecue is not on the menu. You know, you don't really have like barbecue dishes, but that's what makes it so exciting. You said you talked about are you still doing lamb?
I'm doing lamb. Spring, you got to do lamb.
So talk to us how you got to the idea of, you know, what you want to make and how you reached, you know, taking your food and transferring it to a barbecue setting.
Well, I mean, my menu is very, if you look at the menu, it's very Mediterranean driven. I love garlic. I love lots of herbs. I love lemon. I love vinegar. I love salt. So I wanted to throw those combinations in there, but also hit the barbecue setting and also stay seasonal. So, I mean, basically... first thing you said barbecue and you said there's a grill, I was like, well, we got to do ribs. You cannot do ribs. And then I was thinking, well, we could do beef ribs or pork ribs. It's kind of been done. I was like, it's the middle of spring. Let's do lamb. So the deal with the lamb ribs is you get lamb breasts and it has the ribs on, almost like the spare ribs would be on a pork. Mm-hmm. All right. And it's got that flap of meat that just braises really good and it's just succulent and delicious. So I got 200 pounds of lamb ribs coming in tomorrow. I'm going to marinate
them. I actually don't think I've ever had lamb ribs.
Well, you're going to have them tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have them on Wednesday, but I can't recall ever having them or even thinking of lamb ribs. So I'm excited.
It's awesome. That's why these things happen.
Yeah. There's only a couple.
God. Now I'm not coming. Sorry.
Yeah. But it's exciting. I mean, it's also exciting. But, you know, one of the great things about your restaurant, because normally we say, oh, and you get to see the chef, like, cook. You have a very open kitchen, and it's very tight. And those two seats at the end of the bar are... It's like performance theater. It's awesome to see you just like working there with your team. I mean, it's a tight run ship.
No, definitely. We're I kind of, you know, people have said they're like, you're like an orchestra and you're like the conductor and everyone kind of just,
yeah.
And it's true. It's true. You'll never see me yell. You'll never see anyone really, not do it. I mean, to be as ambitious as we are with that small kitchen and the menu. I mean, everyone really needs to know what they do and they kind of just do it. And we're kind of well oiled and, you know, we do it. But it is it's a great show. I mean, it's a common thing. People love to sit at the end of the bar and kind of watch the whole thing go on.
It really is. Well, Jesse, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brooke, also, who's been quiet, but she's...
Yeah, we always need to shout out the PR people and the people behind us.
To Brooke and Cog and
Bullfrog
and Baum.
Yeah, no, seriously, thank you.
Bullfrog and Baum.
Bullfrog and Baum, thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's they're a pleasure to work with, and we look forward to working with you for the summer. Anyway, barbecue's on Wednesday, 7 p.m., 10 Hope Street. We got about... I would say 60 to 70 tickets at the door.
Did we just sell 10 while we're sitting here?
No, but like, let's be honest, what's actually there? Rain or shine, we're getting tense. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Frankie Rose is going to DJ.
Yeah, Frankie Rose, who's was on the Snacky Tunes comp, and Reka Vodka will be doing cocktails and cocktail specials all night.
And New York Magazine will have free issues of their magazine, which is always great.
Yeah.
Do we miss the summer preview? I love that, the summer preview.
We might have.
New York Mag.
So, shifting gears over here.
To the second
main
event.
Do you like that transition? You learned that in radio school.
So, I really liked how you just shifted your actual body.
Yeah,
in the chair.
Your actual body. Before we get into it, we have the boys from Group Tightener, and they are going to play a couple songs for us. And then we're going to talk about music, talk about label and contracts and first ups and European tours and all that good stuff. So, why don't you cue us up? Do you know what he's going to play?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm starting it with Harry Dolan. All right, yeah, this Fluffy Lumbers, Harry Dolan's, which is, excuse me.
That's fine.
He's now this band is kaput, but he's the drummer for Big Troubles. That's his favorite.
Rad.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are your host, Finger on the Pulse, and in today we have the first part of our five-part Brooklyn label series, starting with Group Tightener. Why don't you boys introduce yourself?
I'm Jamie Granado. I also DJ by the name Resound, and
I'm Sam Hockley Smith.
And you DJ by the name of
Sam Hockley Smith.
Very nice.
not even like a play on your name.
You know what? It's something that I just never managed to think of, and because I'm not really a real DJ. Jamie is actually a DJ, so he needs to like do that. I just like to play music, so I do that with him.
All right, that's fair.
I might as well go by my real name, yeah. So no one gets confused.
So let's go back to the beginning, and then maybe 4 weeks before that. How did you guys meet each other? How did you know, what was the drunken conversation? Like, hey, we should start a label in a day where labels...
So, it's funny because it actually was a drunken conversation.
Wasted.
Yeah.
I wasn't. But
I puked right before.
Right after.
On the roof.
Right after. Yeah, right. Basically what happened is Jamie and I went to college together, but we didn't really know each other. We were in a writing class together. Basically, I was just like a kid that listened to only rap, and Jamie had a huge ponytail, and so yeah. I just assumed So I just assumed that was like what he was not in my world. I had never knew. I didn't really take the time to figure it out. I think we knew each other a little bit, but weren't friends. We reconnected a couple years later in Seattle, and then it was right before I moved out to New York. And then like we basically just hung out together for a couple years, and then summer 2009. Spring. It was spring 2009, probably March. It's this really weird hot day, and we were on Jamie's roof, and basically we were like, we should start a label. And then we talked about it a bunch, and then Jamie drank a bunch of vodka and then threw up off the side of the roof, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Word. Swag.
is that it? This is all in your about section.
Yeah, this is all in the about. Actually, it's funny that I have told this story before, but it... But the name Group Tightener, I mean, it's sort of fitting, and it's kind of funny that it's this. We actually had some reservations at first. It's a thing. It's a game, and I'm doing game in air quotes here because it's a drinking game. But really, all you do is just pass a bottle around in a circle. And if someone's like, I don't want it, you're like, oh, the group's getting loose. So it's like kind of a bonding thing. So we figured,
peer pressure.
Yeah, and peer pressure base, which is like the basis of our friendship.
What's the Google ability of your label name?
It's actually really good. It's sort of like, I think it might be related, like the only other thing that comes up besides us is something related to guns somehow.
Yeah, and like gay porn shit, I think, for sure.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, those are two good things to be associated with.
Yeah, exactly. But they're very, but you know, they're below us, so.
Okay. So, how did you guys come to how'd you come to your first release?
It's funny. Our first release was Best Coast, who is like, you know, huge now. For people that don't know, she's like... much bigger than I think even she anticipated. We released a single with her because actually she was an intern at my day job at the Fader magazine, and I sort of knew her there. She was in other bands around before that, but she moved to New York briefly to kind of be like, I'm gonna do it. Like, she tried out New York and didn't like it. And actually the night that we started the label, her boyfriend is Nathan Williams, who's Waves. And he was telling me, he was like, oh, she's, now that she's done with the internship, you should like release, or you should write about her in the magazine. And I was like, yeah, maybe. And then I was like, or we could release it on a label. Yeah. And so we just hit her up, no contracts or anything, and we put it out. And then from there, she became like the biggest thing ever. And we were whoa.
So how does that work for you guys? I know that some labels will set it up where, like, say, like a Passion Pit, when it's on French Kiss, they'll like, when they get upstream, they get a piece of it, but you guys don't have any contract. How does that? How does that work for you guys?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like the common like sort of DIY approach to it is like, we give you 20% of the pressing, you know, and that's like your payment. If you're a touring band, that gives you like stuff to sell, etc. It's weird though, you know. You're saying like contracts earlier. It's like we're weird about contracts. We wanted to make sure there's something in writing that's like, that's cool. Everybody's set, but it's like contracts are kind of scary, and especially when you're first starting out, you know, you don't want like. You know, you got a 30-page contract.
When you're starting out as a label, or you're starting out as
when
a
band? Everyone
both.
Is starting,
I think
like,
both. Yeah, you know, I don't think we wanted it. In general, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't want it. Artists didn't want it. But then the reality, like, basically what happened with Best Coast is that we were like, okay, so we primarily released singles up until very recently. And so we never had contracts because it was like, whatever they want to do after this, they can do. And so she signed to Mexican Summer and... you know, was starting to deal with things that like we were just not equipped. Like, if someone asked us to like, what if they wanted to use one of our songs in a commercial, we'd be like, right? Like, yeah. So we basically were just like, whoa, this is a whole other world we didn't even anticipate. And so what we ended up having to do is starting to actually, you know, become a real record label, basically.
Which is funny. It's almost, since it's like the DIY approach, almost like a band where it's like, yeah, we're just going to start a band. And then, right, like, things start to come into play where you're like, oh, I didn't realize that we also had to deal with these type of things. And as a label side, it seems like you would grow along those ways as well. So now, do you have sync and license in place and all those PR and everything?
We're working on it. We're getting there. You know?
I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's, we released all these artists and as singles, and so they're not technically Group Tightener artists. They're just artists that we released on Group Tightener. So now, what this whole thing made us realize, is that we need to start having Group Tightener artists.
Right.
So, the first real one is this kid, Expensive Looks. He's like 20. He makes, it's also more electronic dance based, which is interesting, which we haven't really explored that much with our label yet, but it's something that we both listen to quite a bit. And that's our first big push as like, this is a Group Tightener artist.
Do you have a track from him we can hear?
We can definitely play a song.
All right, let's play a track from him, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more with the boys.
Cool.
From Group Tightener. This is Snacky Tunes. I am half your host, DJ I Forget.
I'm the other half. I'm Terry Diabolic.
Just getting back in the swing of things. It's gross out here.
Whole week's supposed to be gross.
Sounds like a perfect time to do barbecue.
It does. All right, here we go. We'll be right back.
So let's talk about the philosophy of how you guys find an artist to work with, whether it be a single or now as like a group Tightener artist, and like, what are you looking for besides, you know, in the music and also like in the people that you're going to support?
Well, I mean, a lot of it, we've released a lot of like just friend stuff, you know, and I think a lot of it about like our whole thing is basically we want to be able to work with people that we respect and are honest with, and you know what I mean? People that like are genuine homies that we can hang out with as well, whether we are friends initially or we like, you know, sort of like get to know them and like, you know, like that's.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's partially that. It's also, it's funny because I think what Jamie and I both take for granted with the label is that we both are weirdly on this wavelength as far as what is right for Group Tightener. Like, we'll both like some stuff and then be like, well, that's not really like what we would right. do. But it's just sort of, we have, I mean, a lot of it is that, and a lot of it is just like, how much do we really like this music? It's like, my favorite thing about having a label is like, it's really putting your money where your mouth is. You're like, I mm-hmm. like this enough to actually spend a lot of money on it, not like not downloading it really fast and just listening to it, or not even like buying a CD in the store, like spending real money on something to get it out there.
Has there been anything that you really were into and then gotten farther down the road and been like just not feeling it, like something shift for you, and then how do you deal with that?
What happens with that, which is cool, is like part of the way of working with artists that we actually like and respect and feel like there's a mutual respect there, is that we've been really lucky in that, like, if that happens or if it starts to get weird, then we can be like, you know, like, we really like this earlier stuff, this direction you were going in, what do you think about sort of taking on the role as like a light producer, not like telling them what to do or forcing them, because like, you know, we recognize we're in a situation, we're not giving them a studio. We're sort of like, give us music and we'll make it be on a record. So it's more like being like, you know, this is why we paid attention to you in the first place. Do you have material that follows these same lines, or is that something you're still interested in pursuing?
And I also think we've been lucky because we've released singles so far. So it's like, you know, people give us like four songs or something. We're like, all right, we want to put these two or these three, or you know what I mean? Like six or seven songs, put like three or four out, whatever. But
we've,
so
we've also been, you know, I mean, we have an artist, this guy Secret Colors in Seattle, who he's released a lot of music on himself and on other labels, and we've been talking with him and sort of, you know, literally going through his old stuff and being like, this is the direction that this should go in. So it's a very collaborative process at this
point.
And
they're into it? They're open to it?
They're open to it. And that's the best part. I mean, we won't do it unless it like really right. is necessary, but
So let's play another couple songs.
Cool.
From you guys, what do you have queued up?
We can play, we got everything queued up. We can play one thing is this guy Alex Bleeker. He released he's part of Real Estate. He's a bass player in Real Estate, which is a New Jersey band. We released a 7-inch with him. It's sort of solo. We have that. Before this, we played, that was just Expensive Looks, which was from a 7-inch that we have coming out soon. And prior to that, it was The Twerps, which is a 7-inch that we have that is just now coming out.
Great.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. Caught mid-conversation and little trail of a song. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. We have the boys from Group Tetner in studio today. What was that last song we just heard?
That was Fungi Girls, Owsley Nose. They're a couple teenagers from Texas. Yeah. Like teenagers.
Like teenagers. Like 16, like 17.
Yeah, like so young.
Like parents sit in the room when you guys are talking record label stuff?
The only time I ever really met them was at South by Southwest a couple years ago. And they came.
A couple years ago?
Yeah.
And they were like 14?
It felt, I mean.
They were 15 when they played.
They were 15, yeah. And it was, they were really, and they're still in high school, I believe.
Yeah, they're going to graduate soon, I heard. But
And then they can tour?
They're coming out to New York this summer.
Yeah, we're doing a show with them at the Ding Dong Lounge up near Columbia.
Go on.
With them, another artist putting out Cough Cool and then Expensive Looks.
Are you going to put them up? Like, are they going to crash at your place?
Maybe, I don't know. They're playing it like Death by Audio also. I don't know. They arrange their own shows. They're grown-ups now. You know?
They're grown-ups now.
Other grown-ups in the DIY world.
Yeah.
I cannot stop eating this pizza. I'm sorry.
I know. It's so good. So you guys are about to go on tour in Europe.
Yes.
As the label.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, no, it is.
Sam informed me I wasn't allowed to DJ by myself while I was there. So.
Yeah, it's true. Jamie was like, I'm going to set up some like extra stuff. It's like more like DJ based. So like you might not be able to do it. And I was like,
he was basically like, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was
oh,
like,
that's
well,
cool.
Yeah.
Do you want me to carry your records?
Yeah.
Boss.
Yeah.
it's interesting because as a label now, you're like, it's not just label, you're DJs, personalities out there. And you also have full-time jobs.
I have a full-time job. I'm on unemployment. I've been on unemployment for a while, which is great. It's also why we're able to actually do this in a good way. It's become my job, which is good. And then hopefully, you know, somewhere down the line, maybe I'll have to get a job for another year or something, but we'll be able to do it full-time.
So. I mean, and what's the goal of the label for you guys?
I mean, for us, it honestly, on a personal level, it's just that we can both do it full-time and have it make money and be something that... give artists an outlet to like really do what they want to do and like make it look good and get it out there. Like that's essentially all I want to do. Like I don't have any like grand plans.
I mean, I think also though, you know, it's like we're doing shows, we're doing like events and stuff like that. We want to do more events, you know, we're doing like a t-shirt and stuff like that. I'd like to do like, you know, like things that make sense that aren't just like, hey, we're trying to do everything, but things that make sense to us, such as, you know, like as the outlets come and the opportunities arise, like, you know,
pretty basic stuff. Yeah. Like, no, we're not like, it's not like there's, we're not going to be like Group Tetner the Ride or anything. Yeah. Although,
well, I would not say that.
What does Group Tetner the Ride look like?
I think our logo is just the sailboat. So I feel like it'd have to be like water based in some way.
Yeah.
Some kind
That'd
of sailboat.
Be awesome.
Yeah. Right. It would be good. But yeah. Like
Splash Mountain, but in a sailboat.
Maybe. Yeah. You guys don't know this, but the head of Six Flags always tunes into Snacky Tunes. So you guys are all
Six Flags guy. Just put some people in a boat, let them go. It's the craziest ride.
There you go.
He was explaining to us the Harry Potter ride.
Go on. No, keep this joke going.
No, there's no joke. He's from everyone I heard that the new Harry Potter, like they did down in Orlando, it's like the most insane ride of all time.
Who was explaining this to you?
Blake.
Oh. I was just kidding about that, but yes, we actually know someone who is involved in amusement parks.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. It's no joke.
Yeah,
it's like insane. It's supposedly just like, I don't know if you're into full immersion of science and fantasy.
I'm down.
Yeah, right.
So, Group Tetner, Snacky Tunes field trip to check this out.
To check check out the Harry Potter ride.
So before we get
until a DIY ride, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is just sleeping on a floor.
Yeah, eating ramen. You get to eat ramen noodles in a room with one bare light bulb.
Yeah, and like be like really into what you do.
Or the passive aggressive reasoning classes on who gets the couch that night.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
It's cool.
It's cool. I mean, I only drove, but yeah.
It's like everybody smells like BO.
That's also like a preview of me and Jamie in Europe, I feel like.
Exactly. Yeah, and how long you can last on the bus with no air conditioner.
How long are you two traveling together for?
We're leaving. So we leave the night of the 19th and we get back the 31st. So it's a good solid.
You know, they say a lot about a relationship is based on how you travel together.
I'm saying.
We've traveled together before. It's had its ups and downs.
Oh, well, that's...
we'll leave it. I'll put it this way. I understand that arch eyebrow look because we have the same... travel experience.
Yeah.
So final question before we play the last song for the night. If a label is trying to get on your label, not any label, but your label.
If a label's trying to get on your label?
Did I say that?
A band?
Right. Yeah.
So a label is trying
a band is trying to get on your label.
Meta.
What do you recommend they do for you guys?
Make good music.
Well, I think, I mean, yeah, that's the asshole answer. Like, sorry if we're not allowed to.
That's fine.
Okay, but basically what it is, I mean, you know, it's, I think it's about like anything else, being sort of tasteful about the way that you contact someone. You know, we've had artists contact us and be like, we would like to put something out. And, you know, they, if someone, you can basically, you can tell when someone's just like sending out an email to every small label they can think of.
Right.
And so like, it's someone who's really like, looks like they want to do it. And if we like the music, then like, there's no reason not to do it.
Baked goods.
Baked goods. People have, baked goods would be like, a little sketchy.
I could see some of these groups sending you like cutesy like baked goods and sweaters and like knickknack, like indie baubles, if you will.
Usually they send us really heavily spray painted cassettes, and like we get them and we're just like, this smells like potentially paint. Toxic. I don't really know what to do with this.
Okay, so don't send that. All right, well, we want to thank you guys for joining us. Will you give our listeners all of the necessary how to find you, social,
yeah,
networking, media?
We're on Twitter at Group Tightener. We're still on MySpace, actually. I think we still have a MySpace page. If you're still doing that,
we do have MySpace.
We still have MySpace.
Well, no one's gonna have front surveys.
Yeah, MySpace.com/GroupTightener. If you want to go there, yeah.
We just got GroupTightener.com officially. Yeah. Links to our Tumblr now, and we're working
and
on
email.
The website.
Email.
If should we give that out?
Yeah. GroupTightener@gmail.
GroupTightener@gmail.com.
I mean, it's very different than the other two ones we
could have figured out. All right, well, thank you guys for joining us. What song are you going to take us out on?
I think we're going to take you out with Coasting. So the song called Coasting.
Yeah,
great.
There you go.
All right. We are your hosts, Finger on the Pulse. We will be back next week with Nick Catchdubs from Fool's Gold.
And then Cut, the Knife Guy from Brooklyn, and Maison Premier.
Oh.
Oyster and Absinthe Place. And we'll see you this Wednesday, 7 p.m., at Good Company, 10 Hope Street.
And you can go to FOTPNYC.com for more information.
Yeah, you can.
Thanks for listening.
All right, bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes News with Katie Kiefer. Just this week, I read about one of my favorite television personalities, Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs, who testified in Congress about how disconnected Americans in general have become from the people who produce their food or fix their pipes, make their clothes, etc. Here's what he said. I believe we need a national PR campaign for skilled labor, something that addresses the widening skills gap head-on and reconnects the country with the most important part of our workforce. Right now, American manufacturing is struggling to fill 200,000 vacant positions, and there are 450,000 openings in trades, transportation, and utilities. The skills gap is real, and it's getting wider. In Alabama, a third of all skilled tradesmen are over 55. They're retiring fast, and no one is there to replace them. In general, we are surprised that high unemployment can exist at the same time as a skilled labor shortage, but we shouldn't be. We've pretty much guaranteed it. In high schools, the vocational arts have all but vanished. We've elevated the importance of higher education to such a lofty perch that all other forms of knowledge are now labeled alternative. Millions of parents and kids see apprenticeships and on-the-job training opportunities as, quote, vocational consolation prizes, best suited for those not cut out for a four-year degree. And still, we talk about millions of shovel-ready jobs for a society that does not encourage people to pick up a shovel. In 100 different ways, we've slowly marginalized an entire category of critical professions, reshaping our expectations of a good job into something that no longer looks like work. A few years from now, an hour with a good plumber, if you can find one, is going to cost you more than an hour with a good psychiatrist. So check out Mike Rowe Works, that's his website, where he is announcing a broad-based initiative from Discovery Communications called Discover Your Skills. I think he has a lot of interesting points to be made here, and I think everybody would do well to take a look at it. So this is Behind the Scenes News from Katie Kiefer. Thanks for listening.
The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top-quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured smoked boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.